Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have two guests. They are co-authors of All You Need Is Love, The Importance of Transcending Spiritual Clichés and Living Their Deeper Wisdom. And my guests are Kate Montana and Betsy Chessie. And their book is about the fact that the New Age thought movement has flatlined. Stunning scientific insights and uplifting spiritual information found in the early breakthrough books and films have devolved into a smorgasbord of feel-good social media memes and look-alike spiritual programs guaranteed to deliver overnight abundance, soulmates, and enlightenment in easy five-step workshops. All You Need Is Love is a much-needed antidote, breathing substance and depth back into our quest for health, wellness, and more importantly, our spiritual connection. For more information about Kate Montana, you can visit her website, which is katemontana.com. And for more information about Betsy Chessie and her company, Rampart Feline Media, you can visit rampartfelinemedia.com. And so that, I'd like to welcome Betsy and Kate to the show. Good day, Betsy.
Hello.
Well, I am delighted to have you here. Excuse me. And also, Kate, we have you there.
Yes, indeed. Hi, Robert.
Well, good morning, Kate, and good afternoon, Betsy. We're kind of going through three different time zones today, but it's wonderful. So, let me just start with I really enjoyed your book. I mean, it was funny. It wasn't what I was expecting when I first got the communication about the books, but it certainly exceeded expectations. So, I guess the first thing to start with would be, how did the idea, the inspiration for All You Need Is Love come about? And whomever, you know.
Betsy, go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, Kate and I have been friends for a very long time. And we oftentimes live in different places, and we'll get together on an evening and share a glass of wine over the phone and get on some sort of rant about something, which is usually how, you know, together Kate and I run Rampant Feline Media, which is a publishing and media company. And so we're always exploring ideas and things that we would want to do a book or a project about. And most of the projects that we do, actually every single book or project that we do, comes usually from either Kate or I or both having some sort of passionate rant or desire to explore a topic. And I think this particular evening, we were just sort of both fed up with the sort of pissy, dumbed down, pseudo woo-woo, pseudo positive, memes on Facebook, where it essentially says something. I think that particular night, it was the meme that I used in my chapter, which is basically like, essentially saying, everything that happens to you is your fault. And it's like other people being jerks, that's just your interpretation of them, and they don't have any responsibility for your feelings or something like that. And I just thought, I'm so tired of this game. And we got to talking, and we're like, God, I bet you a lot of other people are pretty tired of this game. And there's a lot of those kind of quotes and memes and, now it's 280 character tweets that really mislead people on what it really means to be on a spiritual journey.
Yeah. And in context, Robert, I don't know if you talked about this before in the show intro, I mean, you know, Betsy was one of the co-creators of What the Bleep Do We Know, and I've been on the spiritual journey for a million years, it seems like. And so, you know, both of us have gone a long way down the spiritual path roadway and seen a lot of changes and a lot of repetition in the message. And it's kind of like everything is quantum this and quantum that, and it's kind of gotten really derivative, and it's like the stream has been drying up and choking on its own repetitiveness, if you will. You know what I mean? And 3 days, you know, 3 day workshops to enlightenment, that sort of thing. And so that was my bugbear that I was ranting about that night, that Betsy had run across a meme that, you know, hey, if something upsets you, if somebody says something, it's your fault, you know, ball's in your court. And so between our two personal rants, I think I'd seen a, you know, yet one more, you know, 3 day workshop to enlightenment, your soulmate in abundance, in three easy steps, and I think that's what had my hackles up. So
yeah, I know, you know, after you've been around it for a while, I mean, it does get to be like you say, repetitive, but I mean it just gets to, you want to scream sometimes, and actually, I think your book does a good job of that.
Of screaming
back, yeah. Well, you know, it's what I would like to do is, you know, talk about several. You basically have essays from 19 different people, and so, well, I guess maybe 20 when you consider the introduction, so including yourselves. First of all, you know, now that you two had this recognition of kind of, you know, where the New Age thought kind of has gone, how did you determine the 19, the others who wrote essays?
Well, it was a matter of, this is Kate, it was a matter of, you know, who you know, and probably other people that I've talked to over the years who have come to the same conclusions that we need to dive deeper into a lot of this messaging, and people who I have known and Betsy has known who are deeply dedicated and serious, if you want to use the word serious, on the spiritual path, who you know, I guess don't suffer fools gladly. People who really do like to go for the meat, and you know, and like a dog with a bone, don't let go, and keep and drive themselves to embody and live, you know, what the heck everybody's trying to teach. And so that for me was the criteria, Betsy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were, you know, whenever we put a book together at Rampant, we focus really on actual credentialed or serious people within whatever subject matter we're talking about. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is really important about our company, is that, you know, our goal is to really bring out voices, new voices, a lot of the time, that are people that have really do have something to say, that maybe don't have the time or energy or haven't yet published their own book, but who really have something of value, and to bring unique voices to the table. So whenever we put a book together, you know, we kind of sit down and we reach out to people, and the first thing we say is, hey, does this subject matter even interest you, and what would you write about, and what are your thoughts? And it was funny, this was one of the easiest books I've ever had to put together with Kate, because so many of the people that we reached out instantly were like, yes. Oh my God. I mean, I call it the McDonaldization of spirituality. You know, it's like they might as well just pop up a drive-through window and go, I'll take the abundance along with this new soulmate, along with the, you know, the thinner body, you know, please, and package that up and go, you know? And so many, I think a lot of people are just really exhausted by it.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, I'm sure those who you reached out to once you told them the idea behind what you were writing would really jump at the chance, because, I mean, it's one of those things where I will say that, you know, the book has already changed me in a couple different ways. And when we get to them, I mean, it's one of those cases where, you know, my my belief system and just the way I would react to certain things, like you talked about the social media memes. You know, it's kind of forever shifted after reading your, Betsy, your particular essay. But let me, I'm going to kind of go in order and highlight some of them. And we just have to start with the introduction. The essay that was written by Chris Grasso is called "I Want to Feel, God Damn It," and he did. I mean, he set the tone. So can you talk a little bit about Chris and just the the point he was trying to make, and again his you know, it was unfiltered coming from him.
Betsy, you've known Chris longer than I have.
Our book, yeah, I think, I mean, look, I am unfiltered. I think that's one of my pet peeves, is we're all so darn filtered. Chris is a very successful author in his own right. He's the indie spiritualist. He's written a ton of best-selling books. And he and I have been friends for a really long time. And his journey to where he is right now was probably one of the roughest journeys of anybody I ever have known. I mean, literally practically dead on the streets, rough journey. And so I thought, who better to open this book about, this game that we're playing called Let's Be Spiritual than somebody who's really taken an interesting, honest, truthful pathway to it. And Chris is an amazing writer. And so, Kate, his chapter is really just about one of the other, I don't think there's a chapter in this book that I can't agree with. And one of the big ones is feelings, how do you feel and processing, Kate, what do you think?
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, I've always loved Chris and when I got his chapter, when I got his intro, it was like, I mean, it even kind of shocked me, even though I know a lot of his story. And I can read just like one short paragraph on page two. And he's talking about, I come from a place where I've nearly died several times due to drug and alcohol addiction, as well as suicide attempts. I've been in jail cells, emergency rooms, detoxes, rehabs, psychiatric hospitals, and wards. I've pissed, vomited, and shit blood on multiple occasions, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But during my times of sobriety, I also stumbled onto what some might call a spiritual path. Seeds were planted, techniques were learned, words by many great illumined teachers were taken to heart. Still, even with all of this motivation and inspiration, I would often return to old habits and behaviors, each time ending in worse conditions and consequences until eventually the cycle changed. And that is a guy who, as Betsy said, has been there and back again. He's been to hell and back. And so a human being who has reached the depths of their own weakness and been humbled like that, Robert, it's like that's the kind of truth telling that we wanted in this book. And when you take a Chris Grasso introduction and shine it in comparison to, excuse me, a lot of fairy bliss, ninny, love and light, ooh, kumbaya, it kind of like wake up, people. We're all in this together. This is not, being a human being is a hard frickin' journey. And we all have the dark in us. We all have these terrible weaknesses that we struggle with and hate ourselves for. And man, Chris had been through all of that. So to have him do this introduction and put, as you say, Robert, put the tone to the rest of the book is like, we're not fooling around with this. Life is not to be fooled with. You know, spirituality is not to be taken lightly. Yes, enjoy it, laugh, dance, etc., but this can be a dark, dark journey as well. So, yeah, I must admit, though, and here's my little anecdote. When I first read his introduction, I had to write him back and say, Chris, I think we need to delete the F word in your very first sentence because people might get the wrong impression about what this book is like.
Well, like I say, I mean, it really kind of set the tone. And yes, Betsy, I could see that you and he are kind of very similar. We just connected on Facebook, and I happened to read one of your posts, and you let loose, and I was mesmerized. I had to read the whole thing. So, but anyway, so I think it's a great, it's just honesty, and it's unfiltered, and it's just I think it's really kind of what people are, need, and what they're also drawn to.
Well, I think we need some authenticity in this world. And, I was listening to the radio the other day, and I heard a promo for, I think the promo was for some other podcast. It wasn't an actual podcast. It was like a promo for an app that you could listen to podcasts. And one of the people said, once you're offended, you're right. And I thought, God, now that is true, because the minute I become offended by something that you've said, then I get that I decide that I'm right. Now, that's different than what I talk about in my chapter. You have to get to a point where, you can discern between, wow, this person's being an intentional jerk to me, or, wow, this person just used language that I am not used to hearing. Right.
Yeah.
So, or somebody said some truth. And I think part of what the world needs, the post that you read is just about once a week, I write my own commentary on what's going on in the world, and mostly political, but sometimes pop culture and other things. And so it's hopefully funny, but it's also very true. thank you. But I tried. My tool is usually humor and a little bit of shocking bluntness, but I think it's really important. I think people, need to want the truth. They want it. They want to feel like, authenticity. And personally, I'm kind of a place now. One of my current rants is I think empathy is becoming the most fake thing on the planet, especially in the New Age New Thought movement. I think there's a lot of people that just want to be victims because they get somebody, they run into an empath who just wants to, oh, I'm so sorry that you're suffering. And they just get caught in this endless loop of suffering because everybody's just babying. Sometimes you need to kick the other person and go, yo, knock it off. Stop it. Okay, have you ever watched that video by Bob Newhart called Stop It? It's the most brilliant piece of spiritual teaching. Anyone on this planet who really wants to get it, go watch that video. It's 5 minutes long, and it's the truth. There's not a lot of empathy. There's not a lot of coddling. There's not all this love and light that we tend to sort of preach as a spiritual movement. It's truth, and I think people need it and want it.
Yeah. Yeah, in that particular, your chapter, which is called Going Beyond Spiritual Glibness, in that particular, one of the things that you point out, is the idea of people taking personal responsibility for how
right.
they affect others, now from this point forward, if I'm ever to see one of those memes it's how you react is your problem and it's not mine. I mean, I'm going to be looking at that with a keener eye. So, I think the idea in your particular book, I mean, that chapter, you really go into the social memes, memes and social media, and I think boiling it down, to frou-frou kinds of words really does a disservice to some people, I think, because it's like, let me go ahead and pay attention to this and everything's going to be fine.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with it. I love a good meme. I actually, if anybody's interested, have a really fun Facebook and Instagram account called Spiritual Porn, where I post all sorts of hopefully hilarious memes and ironic memes and fun things, all related to spirituality. And that's all that those things are. But typically, I don't post a meme, or if I post a meme, I try really hard to extrapolate the deeper meaning of what this little sentence says. Because, most of the time people pull quotes or sayings from some book or some talk where the person who said it or written it has really taken the time to explain what they're saying. And most people don't get that. They don't get that. And the particular meme that I say in the book, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the book. I do have the book in front of me. You know, but basically the book, the meme is the idea that you know, your reaction to the way somebody else is being is on you, not on them. And the truth is, that's absolutely true. I always have the opportunity to choose how I want to respond to anything. Yes, deeply, like at its core, true. But the problem is that there's no nuance in exploring. Well, gee, is this purple? The quote says, "People may say and do terrible things, but only you are responsible for your reaction." So this is big my pet peeve, because what that tends to do, especially in the sort of ego-centric, narcissistic society, what that basically means is I get to be a jerk to you, and you just have to deal with it because you're spiritual and I'm spiritual. And it's like, well, then there's no personal responsibility for anybody's behavior ever, and we can all run around being jerks to each other, and if the other person's hurt from it, too bad. And that actually doesn't serve humanity. That's where we kind of are the way that we are. And that's been a big spiritual trope for a really long time. You have to take responsibility for how you react. Your feelings are your choice. And what happens is that we don't give anybody the opportunity to go, wow, that really hurt my heart. That really hurt me. Yeah. And to be okay and to be safe in saying that, and for the other person to go, wow, I didn't mean to hurt you, or hey, I totally meant to hurt you. Like, we don't have that kind of dialogue. Now it's just my fault if that person's a jerk and I get hurt.
Yeah, I agree. Now, like bookends of a wonderful shelf of books, we have your, Betsy, your essay was first, and then bringing up the back is Kate. Kate, now yours was or is The Soul and Other Assumptions. And in yours, you really take or point out, you know, that some of the quote basic assumptions, I have a soul and kind of all these things that happen that really cannot be provable. I mean, absolutely provable. You know, we sometimes need to kind of look back, look at them differently.
Yeah. Yeah, I always love how these collaborative works come together, Robert. It's just, it's always just fascinating to me that, you know, every book has its own kind of soul and its own components that just seem to come together, and the stories dovetail. And Betsy's was just the perfect starting place, along following Chris. And then I just kind of wanted to let it rip at the end. and call into question pretty much everything, and so the meme that I addressed was, "You are a soul on a journey." Now, I don't know a single quote unquote spiritual person on the planet who wouldn't just nod in agreement and yawn at that. And I had, you know, accepted that description of myself as being a soul, absolutely, ever since I was a little girl in Episcopalian church. So, and then over the course of 35 years of meditation and a lot of deep contemplation and inner work and lots of transformational experiences, I really came to question the existence of the soul. It's like we've created this vehicle to make ourselves possibly feel good about continuing on the journey after we leave this life, and there's some little bit of me that goes on afterwards, after I die. And I had run smack into, you know, I wrote a whole freaking book about this called The E Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials, where I had run into the realization that, wow, I'm not really a soul. I'm divine. I'm God. I am, you know, spirit, period, with no identity, let alone a vehicle called a soul. So that's why I kind of got, that was my rage point. So I just wanted to point out that we assume so much. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, and this is where we came upon the title of the book, All You Need Is Love. You know, God is love. And I'm like, really? I don't know. Who told you that? Where did I, how many books have I read that in? Is it true? Well, yeah, God is everything. God is love. But why are we giving God such short shrift by limiting God to being love and light?
Right. Yeah.
So there were all these massive assumptions that, you know, I just kind of like wrapped into the last chapter of the book as kind of a final kick in the ass, quite frankly. You know, like, well, you think all the rest of it was kind of like questionable. Take a look at this and see if you see what you think. So, yeah,
well,
it was an interesting bookend effect.
Well, I have to tell you how effective you are, okay? Now, I started reading that, you know, and you know, when you went into the platitudes of I am light, I am love, and God is love, you know, you talked all about all that, and, you know, pretty much what you just said is like, who said, you know? So anyway, probably about, I think maybe two or three paragraphs later, you start a paragraph, love and compassion are normally the highest emotions a human being can experience. And my first thought was, well, who said that? Who said that they're the highest? So I was like, I mean, I hadn't even gone a couple paragraphs before I was, you know, questioning, you know. That, so anyway, but I just thought that.
Isn't that great?
It was an example
well, thank
of
you,
how
Robert.
Effective.
That... Job done. Thank you.
You're welcome. So anyway, I, you know, I enjoy reading that. And again, you know, like several of the virtually all the essays have, you know, really prompted the reader to think. Now, well, I'm going to kind of go
well, that's
through.
That's sort of our point. You don't want me just interrupting. It's like that's part of what the goal of the book was, is that it's like we've kind of gotten into this thing where we don't really want to think. It's no fun, and it's tiring, and when someone could just write a meme that explains, oh, you know, everything in your life is up to you. You create your own reality. Oh, okay, fine. Now I know what I'm doing. And then it's easy. You know, then we don't have to do any of the work, so to speak. You know, it's much easier in life when we don't have to think. And that's kind of where, you know, part of the spiritual thing is don't think, be in your heart. Well, and most of the time you say that to people, and they walk around with, like, rose-colored glasses, like, love and light, and then they're doormats, and then they become traumatized, and they have no idea what to do with it. Whereas, you know, make people think a little bit, like, wait a second, what does that really mean? And what does that mean to me? And how do I make that work in my life? And does it work in my life? Or do I think it's a load of caca?
Exactly. Well, one of the essays written by Christine Upchurch, it's called The Downside to Seeking, you know, and in that particular one, you know, I think we are predisposed to the idea that seeking is good, you know, looking for and you know, seeking and achieving is a good thing. But in her particular essay, she talks about a downside to that. So can either of you speak to, you know, what some of those downsides are? What is the downside to being a seeker?
Well, number one, if we believe that as we think, then so life is, you know, like our thoughts create reality. If we believe that, then if we're constantly seeking, then what's the statement behind that? The statement behind being a seeker is, well, I don't know anything, and so I'm in a chronic state of lacking whatever it is I seek, whether it's enlightenment or money or a smaller waistline or a better lover. You know, I don't have it. That's one of the automatic ones that jumps out at me. And I know that Christine was coming at it from partly as a place of, you know, we end up wearing spiritual seeker like a badge of honor, like it sets us apart from the rest of the world and makes us kind of better than other people who aren't seeking, who are, you know, as long as the right six pack of beer is in the fridge and the TV's on, all is right with the world, you know. So a spiritual seeker can kind of like strut their stuff in front of that kind of a consciousness and go, well, I'm a spiritual seeker and I obviously want more. So it kind of leads to this. Well, it doesn't kind of lead, and it totally leads to a spiritual egotism, if you will, which is a real trap on the spiritual path. Betsy, what's your take on that?
Well, it goes. What I think is always funny is like you're always seeking, but everything you have is within you. So it's almost like, well, then if everything that I have is within me, what am I looking for? but I already have it. It's, you know, it's confusing. And it's like, huh? Wait, I'm confused, you know? I think that the idea that, I mean, the other part of it is that, you know, there's a lot of people in the world, I have to come up with a nice way to say this, sort of guru hopping. Guru hopping is like a thing. You know, they go from this guru, and then all of a sudden that guru pushes up against something that they don't want to play with, so they go to another guru, and another guru, and another guru, and they never get anywhere. Because it's not easy. They become addicted to the process of learning or knowing something. And then they sort of lose being on the spiritual path because it becomes less about, they think it's about their own personal transformation, but it's really just about collecting information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know one of the things Christine pointed out, exactly that, Betsy, is that, well, we seek all this information, then we get the platitudes about, you know, oh, being positive thinking and release negativity stored in your body by yoga or do manifestation techniques daily. And she talked about how she was very ill, and so she sought out all of these answers. And then ended up more, as you say, on a superficial level, and it just burned her out, but it also really almost destroyed her because she wasn't making it happen like she was supposed to, like the memes and the three-day weekends said you were supposed to heal your body and heal your mind and all of that. It wasn't happening. So she was like, oh, my God. So on top of the burden of poor health, then she was like, oh, my God, I'm bad and wrong. What's wrong in me that I'm not getting it?
I'm a failure of being spiritual.
Exactly.
I think I wrote an article about that for Mantra Magazine, you know, about being bad at being spiritual.
Yeah.
We're about halfway through the show. I want to take just a quick 90-second break because I do want to invite listeners, since we're streaming live, to invite listeners to call in with any questions at 619-789-4359. Or for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to pose to Kate and or Betsy, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back, you know, one of the things you talked about, you know, positive thinking, and Marie Bernard did an essay on the pitfalls of positive thinking. So let's kind of pick that up, back up when we come back, okay?
Great.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, BiteRadio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, BiteRadio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very special guests are Kate Montana and Betsy Chassie, and we have been talking about their new book, All You Need Is Love, The Importance of Transcending Spiritual Clichés and Living Their Deeper Wisdom. Again, you can find out more about Kate by visiting her website, which is katemontana.com, and that's Kate with a C, C-A-T-E, montana.com. And you can also find out more about Betsy Chassie and the company Rampart Feline Media, which she and Kate have, and it's called rampantfelinemedia.com. R A M P PANTFELINE media.com, rabbitfelinemedia.com. Okay, so that we're back, Betsy and Kate.
Hey, Robert. I'm glad you wanted to talk about Marie Bernard's chapter on positive thinking, because I think if there's any iconic meme, if you will, that characterizes the whole spirituality movement, it's positive thinking.
One of the things, I mean, I think, you know, the idea of, you know, optimism is good. As a matter of fact, I think in that essay she talked about a healthy dose of optimism, kind of emphasizing healthy, is good. But, you know, I think the idea that the meme in the, you know, the idea that we can simply, by being positive, we can turn things to our favor in every, you know, at every turn, is just not realistic.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, her story is really interesting because she, her mother was was bipolar disorder and schizoaffective, so she had two serious mental illnesses. So Marie ended up kicked into the foster care system very, very early in life, which was a very damaging experience. She had no boundaries. She had no sense of self-esteem. So, you know, and this is what she writes about in her chapter. And she was in her mid-20s when she discovered the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, and then quickly thereafter, The Secret. And, you know, and she was just like, oh, my God. I was hooked from the beginning. If I could just jack my spirits up out of my deep depression and my own emotional disorders, then all will be well, and I will sail into the sunset of bliss and harmony. But she couldn't do it. And she said she said it was really wonderful to discover the power of positive thinking. Absolutely. She understood it as a powerful, powerful tool that it is. However, she said what wasn't so harmless was she started to believe, or at least hope, that she could just think and feel her way to a better life without having any skills or ability to do the physical work of building a life worth living. She said she wasn't healthy when this slew of positive affirmation information, and I'm reading from her chapter right now, when it came my way. I was clinically depressed and in a lifelong cycle of trauma and self-neglect. I was in physical, mental, and emotional pain. I didn't have the skills to cope with the normal ups and downs of life. I certainly didn't have the skills to consistently keep my thoughts, energy, and vibration in check. Unfortunately, like a lot of people, I thought if I could just force myself to feel better, life would be easy and then I'd be happy. I was desperately searching for the thing that would fix me and my life. Also, I thought if I couldn't stay happy and if I couldn't force and control life to go the way I wanted, then it must somehow be my fault. Bam.
Yeah. You know, and if anybody had experience to not be positive, she did. I mean, it was hell, really.
She didn't have the psychological skills to be able to actually utilize the concept, if you will, of positive thinking. And she eventually, she went through therapy, and she eventually did grow into that. Yes, Betsy.
I was going to say, you know, the harm that this particular ideology of just be positive, you know, is interesting. When my daughter was about 9 years old, you know, I was very much on the be positive, positive attitude train. Now, I am like a natural optimist. I'm kind of one of those annoying people that can pretty much find the good. You can drop me anywhere and I'll have fun. I'm pretty easygoing that way. You know, but my daughter isn't always like that. And one day, you know, I was trying to go, well, let's figure out the good of this and let's find the way we can make this right and good and happy. And she looked at me and she goes, I don't want to be happy. I'm mad. I want to be mad. And I thought, oh, okay. And the idea that when you teach your kids this kind of mindset, which is, they call it in schools mindset, not meditation, that, you know, always be positive, you don't teach them how to be mad. And then we end up a lot of where we are in the world. Whereas now I'm with her, I was like, God, she really taught me a lesson. It's like, oh, okay. You get to be mad. You get to be disappointed. You get to be frustrated. You get to be hurt. You get to feel those experiences. And what usually happens when you're taught how to process your emotions or experiences in a healthy, conscious way, then the positive attitude comes organically, because you can still be mad but still be positive, like, okay, I'm angry, but this isn't going to last forever. Whereas if it's just shove away the anger and just put a happy face on it, that is never going to go away.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I think that's part of the key, Betts, is what you were talking about much earlier in the show, is authenticity. We so desire authenticity. And when you are authentically angry and pissed off or sad or whatever, you know, there is a flip side of positivity to that, because you are simply experiencing what you're experiencing and honoring it. And then you can come through it and come to a lighter space that's more whole and real.
Yeah, right. You know, in the, you know, the whole idea of, well, like Betsy was saying, you know, the daughter's idea of wanting to be mad, wanting to experience that emotion, you know, that it's, you know, those are emotions that, you know, everybody can obviously relate to, and you know, that we really do a disservice by suppressing those and trying to cover up and maybe even ignore, you know, that particular emotion and what's behind it.
Well, totally.
That's part of what I think the New Age 3 steps to happiness, 3 steps to being rich, really does a disservice, because, you know, I used to tease people all the time. Did somebody write about vision boards? I can't remember, but, you know, I always thought to myself about the whole vision board thing. You know, there was a funny thing about The Secret. You know, I interviewed a few of the people that were in The Secret, and they were kind of, you know, happy that, of course, that it blew them up and turned them into best-selling authors and all that cool stuff. But they were a little disappointed at the oversimplification. And one of them was manifestation, this idea. You know, and everybody's running around making these vision boards. And believe me, I made a few vision boards. And it really wasn't until I finally realized, why am I putting that fancy car on my vision board? Like, well, why do I want a fancy car? Like, what's, when I did the work around examining, what does all this stuff really represent to me? Oh, it represents success. So what I'm saying is, the only way I'm going to feel success is if I have a fancy car. You know, it loses the sort of depth of work that you got to do, that I think is important to do, to go, well, why am I defining success based on the kind of car that I have? Let's do that work instead of painting, you know, big mansions and hot men and nice cars and whatever else on your vision board. Like, what is it, to me, you know, the work really is, what is the life experience that I'm desiring, and how can I just have that experience and not get so attached to what it looks like? And I think when you push people into this idea of, like, look, take my workshop, and in 3 days you're going to know how to be happy because you're going to know how to do this, that, and the other thing. The thing that we wanted, I think, to get across in this whole book is that this is, once you decide for real, I'm going to do the work, this journey is not 3 days. It's not 3 years. It might not even be 30 years or 300 years. It's a long journey, and it requires depth. And nothing in the book, vision boards, seeking, any of this stuff at its surface, if you just take it at its surface, then you're not really doing the work.
Yeah. And you know, and so many, I think, of the platitudes, the New Age memes that we're running with are tremendously not only individually damaging, Robert, but they're damaging to our whole global consciousness and our planet. I think one of my favorite chapters is the one, I think it's chapter 2, Life is an Illusion by Mary Clark. It's just like, I so wanted to include, she's a friend of mine, and I so wanted to include her story, because I too had run across that, you know, whole life is an illusion thing. And I used that personally for years to avoid getting involved in the world, because I thought It was, you know, I want to become enlightened and, you know, oh, hell with the world. It's all an illusion anyway. So who cares if the whales are dying? Who cares if, you know, the oceans are choked with plastic and the rainforests are burning? You know, it's all an illusion, whatever. And it gave me this incredible excuse to not be responsible. And it was just like, and so that was one of my favorite chapters in the whole book. You know, it's all just Maya, whatever. You know, your mother could have died, you know, after a 3-year battle with cancer, but don't worry, it never really happened. It's all just an illusion. And I'm like, oh my God, what a cauterizing, horrific, you know, way to amputate your responsibility, your emotional connection with the world and other people. Oh my God, the world is an illusion. Ah, don't get me started.
Well, you know, it's funny because in one way, there's the preaching of detachment and not holding on and, you know, letting go. And then yet there's a detachment, and then there's also we're all connected. So, I mean, you know, what.
But detachment doesn't mean, detachment doesn't mean not caring. I mean, that's
exactly.
This is something that is become so misunderstood because people think, oh, I should just let it go. I'd not care. I should let it go. Let it roll off my back. Everything is fine. You will not live a fulfilled life if you live that way. And it's not likely you're going to become, quote, enlightened if you live that way, because that's not very enlightened. Detachment doesn't mean I don't care. Detachment means that I experience the grief of loss, the elation of joy, the sadness of heartbreak, that I experience those things with gratitude, and I, you know, and that they are a gift, and that I can experience them and continue moving forward or moving to the next experience. That's what detachment is. It's not like, I lost my house and everything in it. You know, it's just the universe letting me know that something better is coming. Well, it's like, well, maybe you should figure out why you lost your house and what happened there so you don't recreate, you do it again. You know, like, that's the thing that people misunderstand a lot of these concepts.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in many of these practices and you know, beliefs really try and, in a way, separate us from that life, you know, the life to be lived. You know, I mean, in a way, it's kind of, rather than living life, you're, you know, doing all kinds of, you know, seeking and trying to create, you know, at least mentally or visually, you know, something, rather than, like you said, kind of going out there and doing it and having the skills. And actually creating in real time. It's kind of like in real time versus that cyber, you know, ethereal kind of creation.
Well, I mean, I haven't met anybody on this planet who's truly a Buddha. I had a book come out called Tipping Sacred Cows where I wrote a really funny story about this monk dude that I sat next to on a plane once. And, you know, he had the shaved head and the whole thing. And, you know, he was, like, talking about his life all around the world, and basically, you know, his life really consisted of him going to different countries and convincing people to give him money so that he could survive his monk life, which that was not part of the book, but was also part of the stories that he told me. And I saw him get off the plane. We went down to baggage claim, which I thought was pretty funny, considering I thought he was a monk and didn't have anything. Why would he go to baggage claim? But he was in baggage claim, and he pulls off, like, 3 ginormous suitcases. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's very monk-like, but okay. You know, and so then he went out and I saw him screaming into his phone because his ride wasn't there. And I thought, well, he even has a cell phone. You know, if you want to go live a monk's life and live in a cave, then that's a journey. Rock on with that. But that's no more or no better. That's no better a path to enlightenment than living a conscious life where you're actually living. There's no right path. And a lot of people get hooked on this notion that the guys or the women that give up everything and live in the cave, they're the spiritual ones. It's like, well, no, maybe they just are the ones that can't cope with the other reality. You know, that might be there too.
It's I did the live in the cave thing for a decade, and so I've got that T-shirt in the closet, and it was an easier path being by myself and looking at my navel. What can I say? Coming back out into the world and having to deal with life as it is on planet Earth at this point, Jesus, that's hard. But does it ever create more opportunities for growth and self-reflection and self-honesty? And, I mean, you know, Bessie and I have got a great friendship, and, you know, we regularly call each other on our stuff. And is it pleasant? No. Is it productive? Highly. Is it loving? Yes. Is it growth-filled? Yes. Is it easy? No. By God, we're out there doing our best and showing up every day. And
well,
because
we operate on two of the most important spiritual principles that a people actually truly understood and operated, life wouldn't be so darn hard. One is that we operate with forgiveness for ourselves and for the other person. But that doesn't mean we don't have boundaries. And that doesn't mean that we don't take care of ourselves and protect ourselves. But I operate from a space of forgiveness. Like if somebody's a jerk to me, I will tell them, hey, you're being a real jerk to me and I don't like it. But I'm not, I forgive them already for it, because we're all being jerks half the time that we're on this planet. The second thing is that I operate in complete love. That doesn't mean that my love is all, oh, goo goo gaga, I love you, boo boo boo. Sometimes my love is, Kate, dude, you are being mean to me right now. What the heck is up with you? Why are you being such a whatever this morning? Or I didn't like the way you said that. That hurt my feelings. But that's still coming from a place of love, because I also know that Kate's in that place. Kate can receive, oh, I just really triggered Betsy right now. Or, wow, that really did come out mean. Or she has the capacity to reflect. And it doesn't make her a bad person to go, oh, yes, you're right, I was really short just now. Or, wow, I didn't realize that that would trigger you so much. We have the capacity because we love ourselves. We love the other person. So those two spiritual, love everybody and be in forgiveness, are two, again, of the most misunderstood concepts, because they typically make you into the kind of person who has no boundaries and gets taken advantage of, because you don't understand what they truly mean.
Exactly. That whole tough love thing is right on the money.
Exactly. Well, there's one more topic I want to get in before we come to a close, and that one was Sharon Ballantyne's piece, that everything happens for a reason. Because I think next to positive thinking, you know, the idea of everything happens for a reason is right up, for me, it seems like it's right up there as, you know, that's used a lot, maybe abused, and I myself have kind of used probably far too often. So and also one of the things I, you know, learned in reading that, that Marilyn Monroe was credited as the origin of the cliche, which I hadn't known. So, you know, that's going to kind of factor into my future use of that. But what can you, either of you or both of you actually, speak to the idea of, you know, that belief that everything happens for a reason, and, you know,
all sorts of fun cases.
What are your thoughts about that?
It's absolutely true. Everything does happen for a reason. First of all, think about that for a second. Everything does happen for a reason. I got lost because I wasn't paying attention to my map. There's the reason. The trick here is that people have a tendency to, like, the way the brain works is the brain is a meaning-attaching machine. Everything it sees and does and experiences, it has to have a meaning for. That's how it tells you, like, oh, you can put your – there's a chair there, so you can sit down in it, right? So that's how it works. So what we've done is we've tried to, like, overcompensate for that. And now, like, you know, when I'm walking down the stairs and I trip, I say to myself, oh, gosh, you know, Bob – I call the universe Bob, by the way. That's my nickname for the universe. I say, Bob must be really connecting with me and wanting me to pay more attention. And everything turns into so much more meaning, because there – so – you know, everything happens for a reason. Yes. The question is, are you overthinking everything? And then thereby, are you creating more of this stuff than you need to, because you're constantly in this loop of looking for meaning, attaching meaning, making it mean something it probably doesn't even mean, and then going off and reacting from that perspective. And now you've just, you know, you dominoed a whole life experience when maybe you just tripped.
Yeah.
Because you were wearing long pants.
Yeah. I mean, Sharon's story was about she lost her entire family, her mother, her father, her brother, within and her grandmother, who she was very close to, within a 2-year period. And it just obviously put her into an emotional tailspin. And, you know, and so she was very quick to catch on that, you know, she started to go down the road of, oh, why me? Oh, why did this happen? There must be some, am I a member of a soul family? And this has been their agreement and yada, yada, a lot of yada, yada. And she saw it, what she was doing, and caught herself very early and realized that trying to find meaning, and it is, as Betsy said, exactly, the mind is a meaning-making machine. That's what it does. It makes up stories all the time. And then we end up living out of those stories. And bless Sharon, she realized really quite quickly that the story was she lost all of her family in a 2-year period, and she was devastated. And instead of trying to go down the tack of, well, what does this mean and why did it happened and she accepted it, and it allowed her to heal much more quickly and go deeply, deeply into her grief and her remembrance of her family, et cetera, and then move on with her life rather than trying to do the meaning game and then play that. And be, you know, oh, now I have to live up to the, I'm part of the soul group and they've all moved on, and maybe I should move on too, or maybe I should do this, or maybe I didn't get what the message was that my soul group wanted me to get from this experience. Oh, my God. Head, instead of heart, go into the truth of it and then move on with your life. It happened. So, wow.
It's one of the fun things that I love to do. My daughter sometimes likes it. Depends on her mood. She's a teenager. But one of the things I love to do is get out. I collect tarot card decks, all the, because I just think they're fun. And it's really interesting. Somebody will say, oh, let's do a tarot card reading. And they open it up and they get the cards out and then they bring the book out. And sometimes I like reading the book because it's fun. But the first thing I usually say to people when I'm focused is we'll get the cards out and they'll pull out the card and they'll go, well, what does this mean? And I just say, well, what do you see in the card? What does it mean for you? And they'll look at the card and they'll tell me a whole meaning about it. A whole message for them. And then we'll look at the book and the book has nothing to do with that. And I go, well, and they'll go, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't I do what's in the book? I said, the book doesn't resonate with you. You just told your own story. And it's interesting because when you give people that permission, they start to realize like, wow, it's not that the card is giving me meaning. I'm giving the meaning to it. And that's all we're doing. So we actually can step back and say, well, yeah, there is a reason for everything. And I get to decide whether I want to make this the reason is because I'm wearing long flowy pants and they got caught on the stairs, or if I shouldn't go out in my car today because I'm going to have a car accident and Bob is trying to let me know. I get to choose. The idea for a lot of these chapters is to really empower people into a more conscious way of taking in these ideas and really understanding their deeper meaning. And then when you really get them, you can consciously choose to be positive. You can consciously say, I'm having an emotional experience that I need to process. You become more highly aware of the second self. You know, there's the higher consciousness, I guess the way you want to call it, and then there's just the reactionary self. And when you understand these concepts deeper, it's not that they're wrong. It's just that you get to decide, you have more of a conscious way of interacting with
right.
them, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just basically a real world application. You know, the idea, you know, for what's happening with you right now.
Right.
Well,
and the point
Betsy
is going deeper.
I have loved speaking with you both and reading your book, and I want to thank you both for your time. And now you're both on Facebook, and I'm going to introduce you both, so people who are on Facebook, feel free to join us there. And maybe any last thoughts? We'll start with Kate, you know, before we close.
I'm just so excited that we did this because it's just this ongoing uncovering of more. What more is there to look at? What more is there to see and to find? And, you know, I learned so much editing this book and doing this project with Betsy, and I'm just thrilled at the opportunity to, you know, to throw that more card out on the deck for other people and go, hey, there's more. Take a look. So, yeah, it's just been great. And thank you for having us on the show, Robert. Betsy?
My pleasure. And
have
Betsy?
Fun. I call this the plane of experience. You might as well have some fun with it, you know? I mean, that's just you might as well have some fun. I always say that, you know, I'm grateful for my life even when it sucks. And then let it suck. There are good days where it's just going to suck.
That's just the way it is.
You know,
there's something to experiencing the range of emotions. You know what I mean? I just, you know, it just seems, to me, it seems okay. They're to be experienced. But what, before we go, Rampant Feline Media, tell us quickly about, you know, what you do over there, the two of you.
Betsy, go ahead.
Kate and I, so Rampant Feline Media has been my company name for 100 years, and it's a cat. And I'm so grateful to be partnered with Kate. And what we do is we publish books mostly on subjects that really are interesting to us. And usually they aren't books that publishers and more of the mainstream New Age publishers are even going to touch. There's a lot of great voices in them. We have a book called Shamanism in the New Millennium, which is an amazing exploration into shamanism. We have a book called Dancing in the Unknown, which is similar to All You Need as Love, in that it's personal stories of transformation. We have a book called It Came Out of My Vagina, Now What?, a real book on conscious parenting as opposed to the foo-foo books on conscious parenting. And so we have a lot of fun with our titles. We have a lot of fun with the people that we bring together to write in our books. We have Kate's book, Apollo and Me, which is our first fiction book that we've ever published, so we're super excited about that. And we just really want to explore these topics in a way that usually publishers and editors – from those bigger houses don't want to take the time to do.
Yeah, yep. Well, that's great. And people can, again, find out more information by visiting. So thank you both for your time. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you.
Been great, Robert. Thanks.
You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guests have been Kate Montana and Betsy Chassie. We have been talking about their new book, All You Need Is Love, The Importance of Transcending Spiritual Clichés and Living Their Deeper Wisdom. And again, you can find out more by visiting Kate's website, which is katemontana.com, and that's Kate with a C. And then you can find out more about Betsy Chassie and Rampant Feline Media by visiting rampantfelinemedia.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at biteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.